Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today my guest is Hollywood Steve Huey. He's one of the co-creators of the original Yacht Rock web series and a featured talking head in the new HBO movie Yacht Rock, a documentary, which if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably well aware of by now. HBO put it up about a week and a half ago. I actually got a chance to watch it a couple days before it dropped, and I have to say, I really enjoyed it. You know, there's a lot of Steely Dan in it. They make a strong case for Steely Dan's influence on the genre, and the makers of the documentary assembled a real crack team of experts and music nerds to help define and explain exactly what Yacht Rock is. You know, the whole should Steely Dan be considered Yacht Rock thing, you know, that's been a source of controversy for years now, and no more so than since this documentary dropped. I know Donald hates the term, which is why he refused to participate in the documentary, but anyway, I thought, why not have the guy who helped create the genre to begin with come on the podcast and hash it out with me. So we talked all about, you know, Steely Dan and Yacht Rock and kind of everything in between. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Hollywood Steve Huey. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, your ears perk up when they hear something that, you know, is kind of unexpected. Like you couldn't anticipate that that piece was going to go there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The little ear candy bits.
Right. Especially in pop music, because there are certain conventions that your ear just sort of gets used to after a while. And especially now, I feel like in terms of just the melodic or harmonic range of some of these songs, there isn't a lot of variety, or at least there's less than what you would maybe would hear on the radio in the 70s or 80s.
But yeah, oh yeah, I absolutely agree. Like I listen to pop music now, it's like all of the melodically and harmonically, it all sounds very similar to me. And you know, I hate to be one of those guys. I'm getting old now, and oh, things were better when I was young. But it really is true that there was a lot of musical training in the industry back in the 70s and 80s. People had more extensive backgrounds that they brought to pop music that invigorated pop music and made it sound more distinctive and, you know, just unpredictable. And I don't hear that very much anymore. And
yeah,
I want,
Jay
you know,
Graydon,
I like pop
yeah.
music. I want to like fun pop music, but if it all, you know, production wise, it sounds different, but melodically and harmonically, like the underlying compositions are all very, it's way too monochromatic.
Yeah, I agree. It was interesting when, I think it was Jay Graydon says in the documentary that he immediately got Steely Dan because, like them, he was a closet jazzer. You know, like these
yes.
guys were like jazz heads. You know, that's where they were coming from musically, but they were bringing that sensibility to, like, you know, these sort of pop structures. Which
yeah,
I think
and
that's
that's
how you
where
get a
we,
lot of those sounds. Yeah.
yeah, that's where we kind of jump on board with the Yacht Rock thing, because to us, it's basically the sound of that generation of session musicians that came up after the Wrecking Crew, who had their training kind of during the jazz fusion era and brought that sensibility to, you know, not just Steely Dan, but all the other projects they did. You know, it's kind of the house sound or the hive mind sound of those closet jazz or session guys who kind of took all their influences and put them all together into this hybrid genre that, you know, it blends music we traditionally think of as white with music we traditionally think of as black, you know, pop, rock, jazz, R&B, all, you know, soft rock, adult contemporary, all mixed up into one big stew.
And if it doesn't sound jazzy, then it doesn't count as yacht rock, right? That's like jazz has
Pretty
to be an
much.
element of it.
That's kind of what we've settled on because, when we first started trying to, when we were trying to nail down what the genre was that we'd made up, we felt like we knew it when we heard it, but we weren't always able to put our fingers on exactly what made it sound that way, that to that recognizable sound that we were like, that's it. It took a lot more listening, and it took a lot, people from all over the place who were fans of this sound would recommend this albums, and we'd hear more like, oh yeah, that's it. Like, no, I don't think that's it. And what we arrived at was that anything that sounded yachty to us pretty much always had some kind of jazz and R&B influence.
Okay.
The ingredients of this stew will be in different proportions depending on the artist. Like, Christopher Cross has less of the R&B, some jazz, but not as much. But he's still in that Steely Dan kind of sphere of influence enough that, like, yeah, that totally counts. Even though a lot of Steely Dan fans online would like to imagine that he has no connection whatsoever, which I get into a little bit in the documentary.
Yeah, which it's really funny. We'll definitely talk about that, but it's like it's funny because I'm actually coming to Steely Dan sort of like you guys did. Like I really got into them when like after graduating college, like I had a roommate who had a turntable and I thought it'd be cool to buy some records, and then the cheapest ones were always the ones that were, like 70s and 80s sort of forgotten soft rock. Jazz pop, that kind of thing. And
Yeah, stuff
like,
that sold well but wasn't considered cool or hip anymore.
yeah, and I was just like, how bad could this be? Like for a dollar, like I'll just buy this. The covers are like weird and funny now, like the cover of Asia or like the cover of like Kenny Loggins' Night Watch. Like that's just a weird ass album cover. I was like, I'm just
I'll
gonna
keep the
buy this because
fire
I
and
like
hold
the
the magic
artwork.
orb.
Yeah, the orb one. But then, like, you drop the needle on Asia, and it's just like, holy shit, this is actually incredible. Like, this is
Yeah.
like, I only knew Steely Dan as a rock band, but when I put on that album, it starts off with this guy who's like a white guy doing a Ray Charles impression. And then you get those backup singers, and it's like, oh, this isn't even rock. This is a totally different genre. This is something closer to, jazz pop or R&B. This is really up my alley. And then I kind of went from there. That's kind of how you guys also got into it. Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's those like we say in the documentary, like we were all broke. We needed cheap entertainment, and we'd just go buy $1 records from the local Amoeba record store, and that was what was available. It was a lot of the smooth, soft rock, kind of stuff that it was popular in its day, and it was like music that some of us certainly remembered our parents playing. Like, my parents kind of stopped paying attention to modern music, but for a lot of people, we hear like, oh yeah, I remember this one. Like, my dad or my mom would play this in the car all the time. So, like, there's that name recognition. Like, oh yeah, I've heard of this band, or maybe I remember this band. But like, there's a I feel like there is a critical disconnect between the esteem that Steely Dan is generally held in and a general lack of esteem for a lot of what they influenced sound-wise. And I think it really goes back to the lyrics, that Steely Dan's lyrics have a very distinctive voice, and a lot of the other yacht rock stuff, it's more like, it's more geared toward pop radio. It's like a lot of heartbreak lyrics, and it's not the main focus of a lot of the artists who are making this music.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm speaking as someone who loves Steely Dan and loves a lot of the music that you guys have, coined as yacht rock. And after watching this documentary, I agree Steely Dan is yacht rock. I think in terms of the disconnect, I think for a lot of fans, they see kind of, and it is based on the lyrics, the kind of the world of Steely Dan, the sort of lyrical universe of these characters and the world they're inhabiting, that it's sort of this Los Angeles of this time, and that in a way, Donald and Walter were, it's almost like a savage takedown of these people and these characters and the sort of superficiality of their lifestyle and maybe the, the sort of loserdom of it all, and that they see Donald and Walter doing basically a send up of this music. Does that make sense to you? Like, they don't
Yeah,
want
totally.
Steely Dan to be associated with, I mean, the Eagles are the ultimate example, and you actually follow that trend to having the Eagles kind of like as this weird antagonist to Steely Dan. But I think that would also include like a lot of, soft rock or, I guess yacht rock as part of that world. So I mean, I can sort of see both sides of it. I understand where these Steely Dan fans are coming from. I actually have noticed that since the doc drop, a lot of people who used to make fun of Yacht Rock are saying how much they love the documentary. And I know Michael
That's
McDonald was
good.
always cool to these people, so he's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because, and I would imagine that's where Donald Fagen is coming from. Like, I would just think that he doesn't want his musical legacy to be reduced to something that conjured up like being on a yacht, like having a grand old time, when he was trying to, in a way, like show the like dark side of that lifestyle or something.
Well, I think what I come back to with
Yeah.
that is, I in certain ways, Steely Dan speaks the language of irony in a way that I recognize. And one thing about irony, which I think ultimately comes across from the Yacht Rock web series, is even when you're making fun of something, even when you're kind of sending it up, you can't stay obsessed with it for that long if there isn't a part of you that also quasi secretly loves it. And Steely Dan, part of the joke of Steely Dan is that, it's this edgy, cynical stuff set on top of this incredibly smooth, like, I've heard Donald talk about how much he liked that kind of faux space age, easy listening stuff from the 50s, like the really futuristic stuff, that how kitschy it seemed in retrospect when none of those future predictions actually came true, which I think which he kind of gets into in IGY.
Right.
But also, in addition to that irony, those guys really were obsessed with like having all the latest recording technology gear to make it sound that way. Like, they really did, on a certain level, love that sound, even if they didn't want to admit it in public, even if they don't want to let anybody into what's actually going on inside their hearts, because that would involve vulnerability. They really did love that sound. They really did love all the jazz that they were influenced by. And I think, if there's anything that gets you into Donald Fagen's heart, it's that it's he really wanted he legitimately wanted to impress the jazz guys he was influenced by. Like, you read these stories about how, they'd get Wayne Shorter in to do the solo on Asia, and he like nailed it in two takes. And Donald, the first one was great, but Donald had him do it again just so he could hear it done again.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And stuff like that, like when they got Phil Woods in to do Dr. Wu, kind of the similar thing, where like they're just in awe of these guys. So, I mean, there is a certain gooey center hidden in the middle of Steely Dan for the stuff that they really genuinely loved. They just don't want to admit that they genuinely love anything. And that is kind of what we were often accused of with the web series, is Well, you don't love this music. How can you love this music? You're making fun of it. Like, you've ne haven't you ever made an affectionate joke about something?
Right.
Don't you have siblings? That's the whole point of having siblings, is to make fun of each other. But it's this like, we're doing the same thing with the web series. We're doing it ironically on the surface, but yeah, we're like, we really love this stuff. I think we felt we had to deal with what the image of the music was at that time, which, it was like, oh, this is bland, this is boring, this is unhip, this is square, this isn't cool. This isn't the image I want to project to the world of myself by listening to this. So we just kind of played it against type, where like, oh, you think this is bland and boring? We're going to tell you the incredibly passionate, melodramatic stories of how these songs were written. And there's going to be a lot of swearing, and it's, we're going to, like, everybody's played against the stereotyped image of who the public thought they were at the time. And, in hindsight, it really, I think, helped change the public image of what people thought that music was. Maybe it didn't go in a direction that the artists would have liked for the most part.
But you weren't even casting Steely Dan along with those artists. I mean, everybody was. Everybody associated Steely Dan with these other sort of 70s soft rock bands, like, this session guy era when it was, Buzz Skaggs and Toto and Michael McDonald, the Doobies, right? Like that wasn't even necessarily your, like, putting Steely Dan with those groups, not to mention Donald Fagen, toured with Michael McDonald and Buzz Skaggs, even after the, so he's always been part of this scene, right? I mean, all these guys who went on
Absolutely.
to make, what is now called Yacht Rock, they're all connected to Steely Dan ultimately. Like they're probably, I mean, I think in the documentary, aren't they the center of the entire universe of Yacht Rock?
Absolutely. And because, like, the people, when they stopped touring and they became a studio only entity, they had to scare, they had to like scour the LA session scene for the guys who could play their music. And so it was kind of like turned into this thing where, if you ended up with a credit on a Steely Dan album, you were the baddest of the bad, the best of the best, the cream of the crop. It became this kind of badge of honor for the session guys to like make the cut after, 100 takes of whatever on a Steely Dan session.
We'll lay back and observe the constellations and watch the moon smile and bright. I'll play the radio on southern stations, 'cause southern bells are hell at night. You say you came to Baltimore from Ole Miss, a class of 7-4 gold ring. The eastern moon looks ready for a wet kiss to make the tide rise.
Yacht rock, what puts it on the yacht is that it has to be conscious of black music. It's got to have a jazz and R&B kind of underpinning to it.
So it can't just be uncool, smooth music. It can't, like, Billy Joel, Wings, later
Like those,
Chicago. These don't fit the mold because
they
they
don't
don't
come from
have
that
that.
LA session community, and they
Right.
don't have that, that really. There's always been room for smoothness as an aesthetic in R&B, and to a certain extent jazz too. And I think that's where it comes from, black music that wasn't afraid to feel that way.
Right.
And so that was kind of the and it, like mo going from that blueprint, we kind of surprised ourselves with what songs didn't actually fit that definition that we'd kind of always assumed were yacht rock too, like Seals and Crofts, America, Bread, the early soft rock stuff doesn't really fit. Seals and Crofts are kind of getting there because they do use a lot of session guys and they're a little more progressive in their song structures. But
Is Summer Breeze
Brandy, you're a
yacht rock
fine
or
girl,
not?
huh?
Summer Breeze? Does that
Not really.
count?
It's kind of proto yacht, but it's
Hmm.
not quite there. The Seals and Crofts, It Gets on the Boat is kind of like their last couple albums where they've got a
Okay.
funkier rhythm section.
Okay. I don't go that deep with them, to be honest, yet. You know, there's
Neither did
always
we
time.
until we started doing
Can I
it.
actually throw some songs out at you
Yes.
and ask, you know, I think these are songs that I'm pretty sure you don't consider yacht rock, but I'd like to know the kind of rationalization, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Putting you on the spot a bit, but I'm just curious.
I bet I've heard of them.
I'm sure you have. So, well, the first one actually is kind of similar to Summer Breeze, which is Starbuck Moonlight Feels Right. I feel like those two are kind of
Actually,
coming.
we put that one on the boat. We put that one
Okay.
on the boat just by a hair, because it's got kind of that. They got some jazzy harmonies in the chords. You know, there's a vibraphone solo, which you don't really get outside of jazz. It's got a nice little groove. So that's kind of an early. That's one of those earlier proto. I think it's from 1976. So that's one of those kind of proto yacht songs that actually does kind of qualify as a yacht rock song.
Okay, so it could like kind of like mid period Steely Dan, you know, maybe
Yeah.
Bad Sneakers could be considered yacht, but
Yeah, I think we kind of, okay, here's our ground rules for basic ground rules for Steely Dan.
yeah,
Early guitar oriented classic rock stuff, no.
right,
The blues rock shuffles, not really. Like they're off
okay.
kilter for blues rock shuffles, but they're still kind of like they still have that kind of classic rock swagger to them.
So Josie's not one for you.
Everything on Asia is. Everything
Okay,
on Asia
everything on
has
Asia. Okay.
jazz and R&B to it that it's on the boat. I think
Okay.
probably the same for Gaucho.
Okay.
And then the transitional period is where they're just starting to incorporate R&B into their sound. So the Katie Lyde tracks that have Michael McDonald on backing vocals, that's got that blue-eyed soul feel that Donald doesn't really bring to the table all by himself. And then when they start getting Chuck Rainey in on bass, when they get Bernard Purdy on drums, when they get Rick Marotta on drums from New York, when they get the funkier rhythm sections on, you know, some of the Royal Scam tracks like Kid Charlemagne, that's where they really start to solidify the R&B part
Because
of
they were
that.
literally playing on the R&B records that, you know, ultimately influenced that music, right? Like
Absolutely,
Purdy
yeah.
and Rainey, you know, played on Aretha Franklin and, you know, a lot of those other, you know,
Exactly,
legendary
exactly.
R&B artists' albums.
Exactly. So,
Here's
next
another
song.
one. Yeah. Here's one I was surprised to see that I don't think you considered yacht. And I love this band. I love this song. I think this song could be considered yacht, but maybe not other ones. But Little Feat, and the song I picked was Red Steamliner because Michael McDonald is doing the backing on the chorus.
Yeah, we did put that one on the
Oh,
boat
you
too,
did?
specifically because Michael McDonald is doing
Okay.
the backing vocals and that does so much to give it a yacht rock feel. So yeah, Little Feat, a lot of their stuff is kind of too blues based, kind of country fried.
But that album brings in some, like, I think it's Time Loves a Hero brings in some of the jazz fusion, you know, elements. So,
Yeah, and Bill Payne in particular did a lot of session gigs around that time, and he was more into the jazz fusion stuff. So once Lowell George started to lose influence in the band because of his drug problems, and they go in more of the band direction, they do get yachtier on that stuff because, you know, they're bringing the jazz fusion elements into it. And you know, and also, you know, they're kind of some of them are becoming part of that session community and getting out and playing on all these other records and bringing that back to what they're doing.
here's one I think also I was surprised to see was not considered yacht because it has so many of the guys on it, but Donna Summer's version of State of Independence.
Yeah, and you know, that's one that Quincy Jones, I think that's the one Quincy Jones said Michael Jackson ripped off for Billie Jean.
Well, it's produced by Quincy Jones and it has like Michael McDonald, Kenny Loggins, it has like so many yacht rock associated people. But you don't
Yeah.
necessarily hear it up front in the mix because it's kind of almost more of a sort of like disco song, I guess. but.
It's some of that stuff, even though it's got all the personnel you'd want on it, it goes too far in one direction of the hybrid to like it doesn't have enough of the rest of it to qualify. And that was one I think where we heard a lot of like, this sounds more like straight up R&B. This sounds like, it's got that post disco feel where it's still got some disco flavor. Like it's close, but it's just kind of too far in one direction. It's a delicate balance that, part of the reason we do the Yacht or Not podcast, where we rate all these songs on a scale of 1 to 100 in yachtiness, which was a spin-off of that Yacht Rock episode, because people started asking us on Twitter and social media, wait, what about this? It's exactly what you're doing now. People had questions and we had to start answering them. So we just made a whole spin-off podcast to do that, which we're still doing. But yeah, like we'll argue amongst ourselves about this for considerable amounts of time because one of us hears something that the other ones don't, and it's kind of ear of the beholder sometimes where like I hear enough of the elements of this hybrid to call it yacht rock, and then some, like I don't really hear that much. I don't hear enough of this. So it's endless debate that rewards nerdery, I would say.
I had one more that I want to ask, and then we can move on from this. I mean, we could be here
Okay.
all day doing this, but what was it?
Oh, we easily could.
One song, and I'm trying to give a reason other than it just feels yachty to me, but Fleetwood Mac, You Make Loving Fun. Of all the songs on Rumors, I feel like that would be the one that has a bit of a yachty feel to me, but I don't know. Just
I mean,
something
it's
about the
got,
aesthetic of it. It just feels yachty.
yeah, occasionally we'll go back and we'll listen to something we never considered before and think, oh, wait, maybe we had that experience with Michael Jackson's The Girl Is Mine once we got to the bridge. Like, oh, wait, I think it is. Lionel Richie's All Night Long, which I'm still not sure about, but the other guys are like solid on, like, oh, yeah, that is on the boat. I'd have to go back and listen with a specific ear towards that with You Make Love and Fun. Like I think it has, Fleetwood Mac has that very Southern California soft rock sound. Generally I just think they don't have enough jazz or R&B in the like otherwise it's like a perfect Southern California record, but for the boat it lacks a little bit of black music influence to me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. And then the Eagles are like not only not on the boat, but they're sort of the antithesis, right? Almost.
Yes. Yeah.
Is
The Eagles and
that
Jimmy Buffett are the antitheses of
from
yacht rock. And
and
Jimmy
then
Buffett is one of those guys who everyone thinks he's a yacht rocker because of his lyrics, but he isn't because of his sound.
oh, most people think Yacht Rock is Jimmy Buffett, but they couldn't be further from each other, right? Like,
Yeah, I
does that
actually
drive you nuts? I mean, does that piss you off as the co-creator of Yacht Rock?
it drives us nuts in the same way that it would drive Steely Dan fans nuts to be grouped in with Jimmy Buffett. Like that's one thing I agree. Like, no, Steely Dan should not be grouped in with Jimmy Buffett because they are the antitheses of one another musically. But yeah, the Eagles are like they're too country. They don't have like the only Eagles song I can point to that has an audible R&B influence is I Can't Tell You Why. And even that to me, like there's not enough groove to it. The Eagles do not groove at all. And we did put there's a Timothy B. Schmidt solo song from I think 1984 that we did put on the boat because there is enough jazz and soul in it to qualify.
And like Michael, he appears on a lot of Yacht Rock songs, right? As a backup.
Yeah, Timothy B. Schmidt, because he can sing so high, he ended up on
Right.
some Steely Dan albums as
Now,
well.
how did you have the idea to incorporate this sort of Eagles versus Steely Dan feud into the Yacht Rock series? Because that's sort of a big part of it. And then that
Yeah.
is still also a thing today, like the Eagles and Steely Dan being these kind of weird rivals. I know they toured together the last couple
And
of
they have
years,
the same
but
manager, Irving Azoff.
right, of course.
Basically, so when we did the web series, I think JD wrote like, the vast majority of it. And the idea was that the Yacht Rockers were the heroes, they were the protagonists. And then the antagonists were rivals from other parts of the wider soft rock universe. So Hall and Oates, they don't have that Southern California sound on most of their stuff. There's a couple of tracks we put on the boat officially, but they're from the mean streets of Philadelphia. They've got a whole different kind of blue-eyed soul sound that doesn't really incorporate much jazz. And they're from the mean streets, so they're mean. The Eagles, not yacht rock because they're too country, and they kind of we portrayed them kind of as frat douchebags, but the same thing, same idea. They're antagonists because they're not yacht rock. They are rivals with yacht rock. And the same thing with Jimmy Buffett. What was the Chiron Tropics obsessed lunatic?
But
Or
I think you really
MGD.
hit on something because even more, there's far more antagonism against the Eagles than there is even of like the Yacht Rock associations among the Steely Dan fan community. I mean, I don't know if that's
Yeah.
your doing or if that sort of just emerged organically, but like
I
there's
mean,
this
part of the
weird
reason, also
rivalry.
part of the reason the Eagles were selected is that JD had bought a Steely Dan book and they talked about that little,
There's
that
the
minor
line and
lyrical trivia
yeah.
with, the lines between,
Hotel
Hotel
California, stab him with
California.
their steely knives.
Yes,
That must
exactly.
have been the origins of it, because that's like a known, because Steely Dan wrote in Everything You Did, Turn Up the Eagles, The Neighbors Are Listening, and it was supposed to be
Yeah, and
like
that
a
song
diss.
about like it was like about a guy abusing his wife or something.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think you hit on something there. I also, rewatching some of the series, I imagine you watched the Classic Albums Asia episode or that JD
Oh
did
yes. Oh
when you made
yes.
that, because there are like explicit references to things like, I mean, first of all, Donald and Walter sitting at the mixing board, that kind of appears in the web series, and then also the making Michael McDonald do like take after take of Peg gets spoofed. So is that a big source of
Yes.
inspiration?
I don't remember when that doc came out. I don't remember. I didn't see it until later, but that could have been.
It came out before your series, like a couple of years. So
Oh, okay.
timeline-wise, it makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't around for JD writing that one, but I wouldn't be surprised if he drew on that for inspiration. But I think he was also reading up on Steely Dan more at the time, so it could have just come from like just a story about how they made Michael McDonald do a bunch of takes for Peg.
And I also love who is the actor who plays Donald in that?
His name is Mike Chilian.
Okay.
He has gone on to he's got a career in animation. He created a show called Tig and Seek for, I think, HBO, let's say. But yeah, he's a successful animation guy now, Mike
Oh,
Chilian.
well, good for him. I think that he also, I mean, I don't know if he watched that doc, but he definitely watched concert footage of Donald Fagen for sure,
Oh, he
because
absolutely did.
he
Yeah.
did an amazing job of sort of embodying Donald's very specific sort of movements on the piano and his mannerisms
And
and sort
that
of
was all
tics.
him. When JD asked him to play the part, I think JD just had it like he was just going to be like a bebop cat talking, scat singing stuff. But Mike, independently of his own volition, went and researched all that stuff, watching concert footage so that he could really nail the performance down. And he did a really great job.
No, he did an amazing, like the
Like
kind of way he
that's
moves
all
his
him.
head and his hands, it's just like it's exactly like Donald. So I think actually Libby Cudmore said on her episode of this podcast that when she listens to Steely Dan and she imagines Donald Fagen singing at the piano, that she actually pictures Mike from the Yacht Rock series and not the
Yeah,
actual
I mean,
Donald
because there
Fagen.
isn't that much concert footage of Donald Fagen from that era, from the Yacht Rock era, because they were, studio only.
I mean, there's barely anything from the 70s, and it's all from the early 70s, and then yeah, then it jumps to the 90s. So,
Yeah.
but anyway, yeah, I thought he did a great job. That jumps out.
Somebody else's favorite song. Give
more than yacht rock, just in terms of the sound, Steely Dan bears even more influence and perhaps more sonic similarity to another subgenre that sort of has a cult following, which is Japanese city pop. Do you have any thoughts on that? Are you a fan of the genre?
I found out about it more recently, and we actually just did a deep dive into this on the Yacht and Yacht podcast as a special episode number 50, where I kind of picked out, kind of a combination of kind of history of city pop plus, like, key tracks that have kind of come back and gone semi-viral in the internet age, with also the stuff that sounds a little more influenced by yacht rock to me. We did like a 10 song rundown, and Japanese city pop is interesting because they almost use yacht rock like in the way that you might use samples, where they kind of borrow little bits and pieces that they like, but then construct their own song around them.
Right.
So it's got this unmistakable influence, but a lot of times, like, it's clearly influenced by yacht rock, but does it also qualify as yacht rock on top of city pop? Like, it's a really interesting debate to have, because the feel is just subtly different enough that sometimes it's just its own thing.
I heard a city pop song that was quote unquote sampling Josie. It kind of sounds like an alien came to Earth and heard Josie and then went back to his planet and was like, I heard this song on Earth. Let's try to recreate it, because it has all these really weird synth sounds. And it's like, it's Josie. It has the same intro, and then the guitar has the chun, 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 but then it's like, everything is like slightly off about it. It's very cool. Yeah, and then, I mean, there's other stuff like Makoto Matsushita. There's like unmistakable gaucho influence all over that album. But he takes elements of gaucho and then blends them with other things, and he kind of makes it doesn't sound like a ripoff. He took that influence and kind of made it his own in this really great way. But production on those albums is unbelievably good.
Yes. Yeah. Like they're, it's Japan's economic miracle. They can pay for really solid production. And in some cases they would fly to LA and just hire those session guys, like the same yacht rock session guys for their own records, because they could afford it. I think Jay Graydon made some remark about briefcases of cash, something like that, were in play when the city pop artists wanted to hire their heroes.
Yeah, there was one city pop album I was listening to called An Insatiable High.
By Masayoshi Takanaka.
Yeah, and I was listening to one song, I was like, man, this groove is incredible. Who's playing the bass? And it was Chuck Rainey. Like, the whole thing was recorded in Los Angeles, like, and it had a bunch of the guy. I mean, so I always just assumed this stuff was all made in Japan, but actually that's not true. Some of it was made within the same session, in the same studio conditions. Like, Chuck Rainey played on that the same year he played on Asia, which is kind of incredible to think about.
Like, you get into city pop and you'll start recognizing all these yacht rock songs. Like, Stay With Me is absolutely built on It's the Falling in Love by Michael Jackson from Off the Wall.
Okay.
Toshiki Katamatsu has multiple songs that incorporate the Doobie Bounce, the What a Fool Believes piano riff. I've heard multiple songs I forget the other, like Junko Ohashi has a song called I Love You So that is like a dead ringer for Chaka Khan's What You Gonna Do With Me, What You Gonna Do For Me.
Right.
Like it's kind of this game of like spot the yacht rock song.
Yeah, I love that montage in the documentary where it's playing all the What a Fool Believes knockoffs, like one after the other.
I was really impressed with that. There were some
Yeah.
deep cuts in there.
Yeah,
I guess they went to the Yacht Rock Nation Facebook group and hit people up for like give us some doobie, give us some What a Fool Believes ripoffs. And that group has done, I think they do like a tournament bracket or something
oh
where
my
they have
goodness.
like 64 What a Fool Believes ripoffs, and they pit them against one another to decide a winner. I'm not sure how exactly that works, but yeah, there's a lot, like some of them we haven't even rated on the Yacht or Yacht podcast yet. There's so many of them.
Do you know that one? It's by Rita Lee, who was a member of Os Muchanches, but she did one
Yes.
where it's like, it's a, I mean, the piano part is close to identical, but I
It's
think it's
very,
called
very, very close. Yeah,
Lanza
we actually
Perfume.
Lanza Perfume. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually just rated that on a recent episode. Some
I
friends sent it in. But yeah, like we yeah, that was definitely confirmed a Yacht Rock song.
Okay, good.
It's very difficult for a song to not be considered Yacht Rock if it has the Doobie Bounce piano riff in it.
Right. Because What a Fool Believes is like the apotheosis of all things yacht in terms of
Yes. And
how
it's
you.
amazing how many songs rip that off. Like, some of them are just like album track filler. They just got to get something to fill out the album and like, oh, okay, we'll just rewrite What a Fool Believes. Everybody else is doing it. But like for a few years after What a Fool Believes, that riff is everywhere. They reached out to me and JD, I think is how it went. And yeah, I mean, we because of all the work we've done on the podcast, and yeah, we were ready to go. We knew the history, we knew what we thought about it, we were pretty much on the same page, and so
Not a
I
lot of
think we
prep
were able to
needed.
give
You
them
were,
a
yeah.
nice backbone to drive the narrative
Yeah, I
is
mean, it really drove the narrative in terms of, because what I loved about the doc, and which kind of pleasantly surprised me, I thought, I guess just because I thought it was sort of a big network doing it, that it would be leaning more on the sort of silliness of, yeah, like the wearing the hats, and you'd see, I just thought it was going to be kind of
right.
goofy.
And a lot of that comes from the web series, and a lot of it comes from the
No.
cheap costumes we had because we were broke.
No, it's not even
Like a
that. I just.
$10 captain's hat is an easy costume for anybody, so it got popular again.
Yeah. I feel like it sort of became a joke in the culture a little bit where people still didn't take the music seriously, which obviously you guys did with your podcast and like the Yatsky scale and everything. Like you're really, there's a real sincere appreciation of what these guys were doing.
Yeah, we're nerding out on this hardcore.
Yeah, and I feel like the documentary honored that in a way that I didn't fully expect. So, like I said, I thought the doc was excellent because of that. And also because the doc had like Questlove and Thundercat, like I really appreciated how they showed that, the thing that makes yacht rock what it is that it's really coming from sort of like black music styles like R&B and jazz, and how it does it, like it has translated across, like Michael McDonald got airplay on, R&B radio. So
Yeah, he was on Soul Train,
yeah.
and I think it's great that it's not just us white guys saying that this comes from black music. It's like confirmed by actual black musicians. Like,
Yeah.
yes, we love this stuff because it it comes from our traditions.
Right. Yeah, like Thundercat bringing Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins to Coachella with him, like this, you know.
Yeah,
It's kind of this
exactly.
beautiful thing. I mean, I can't stand when people are like Steely Dan is music for whites or something, like, or like one thing that I've seen on social media is like white people went off when they like when they made Steely Dan, and I was, or like white people went off when they laid down the groove for Peg, and I was like, the groove for Peg was done by like Chuck Rainey. Like, there's like Chuck
Yeah, that was
Rainey and
Chuck
Bernard
Rainey,
Purdy
and I
were,
think Nick Murata.
it was Murata, but like there are a lot of the classic Steely Dan songs, it's like Rainey and Purdy. It's like this,
Yeah.
literally, this is a collaboration between like white and black artists, like all of,
Yeah, exactly. And it's,
especially the
you know,
later Steely Dan album. Yeah.
I suspect that this level of integration at that time could only have happened behind the scenes in the studio. You know,
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it would have been.
I was only like 2 years old when Asia came out, but
Well, one of the mythical things about Asia is that they were supposed to tour. They booked dates, they sold tickets, and then they canceled. But I believe
yes.
that, I mean, part of the reason was because it was actually going to be so expensive to pay these guys who were getting used to pay, be paid by the hour in the studio, to pay them
Yeah.
for a full tour. And like, I
Yeah.
don't think Donald and Walter wanted to like stiff Chuck Rainey. You know what I mean? So they were just
Right,
like,
yeah.
we can't do it. Like, we can't,
Like
like,
we
let's just.
can't make it worth their while.
No, and obviously they're incredibly like perfectionist tendencies. But then
Yeah,
they
they
later
didn't
did.
like
I mean,
playing
you look at
live
the,
anyway.
yeah, but then you look at the Steely Dan lineups from the later years, and it's like Freddie Washington on bass, Ricky Lawson on drums. Like, it's a very much an integrated act. I mean, it's like half and half usually. I mean, the backup
Yeah, like
singers are often.
there's certain like social media comments that
Yeah.
like yeah, and then there's certain ones that are like you can't call this white boy funk because those aren't white boys playing the
I
funk
agree. Yeah. And
most of the time.
I feel like it was so important for Yacht Rock, especially with this documentary where it's kind of like establishing the legacy of this genre, to make that point, because I feel like so much of the Yacht Rock jokes are about it being like music for white people or something, which it just,
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, that's always pisses me off, especially with, I mean, mainly with regard to Steely Dan, it pisses me off. And I understand why, because Donald and Walter are white, but you know, so much of it is, I mean, so much of the music was literally played by black artists. It's influenced by, you know, music made by black people. So I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way. And hopefully, you know, the record has been set straight a little bit.
Yeah. I would love, you
Yeah.
know, it's not possible anymore, but I would
Yeah.
love to see just a photograph of every musician with a credit on a Steely Dan record, because there'd be so many black musicians in it, and you could really see for yourself,
Yeah.
like, oh, this was really, really integrated.
Yeah.
Can I plug a few things before we go?
Please do. Yeah. Where can people find your stuff or hear you or your podcasts?
Okay, so our podcasts are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. We have the Yacht or Not podcast, which is where we rate songs on the Yachtsky scale, and you can submit your request by joining our Patreon, only $2. What can you get for $2 these days? Not much, but you can get your song rated on the Yachtsky scale. We also have a podcast called Billion Dollar Record Club, which is anytime we listen to an album front to back and discuss it, and any record that we review through the exposure on our wildly popular hit podcast then becomes worth $1 billion, and you can invest your money on the ground floor, and it's definitely not a pyramid scheme where we're just trying to inflate the value of our record collections because we don't make any money any other way. We also had We're about 2016 to 2019-ish. We had the show I was talking about earlier called Beyond Yacht Rock, where we'd make up a new genre every episode. We're kind of pondering. We're going to keep the Yacht and Yacht podcast going. We're kind of going to take a hiatus for the holidays and re-examine what we're doing with the non-Yacht Rock show, and kind of, I don't know, maybe go one direction or another. But that's to come in the new year. We also, and this is the last thing I'll plug, we are also writing a book. We got a book deal right before the pandemic, and we've been working on it ever since. We're going to try and wrap it up in the new year. and get it the hell out, because you know this documentary is out there. we want to take advantage of the increase in interest while we can. I don't think we don't have a working title yet other than the Yacht Rock book, but that's that literal title I think has already been taken. So please keep an eye out whenever this podcast airs, however far down the road you folks are listening to it. Please keep an eye out for our Yacht Rock book, which hopefully will be out sooner rather than later once we finally turn a goddamn draft in.